Welcome again to Denby Does Dharma. I'm joined by Sol Luckman from the other side of the world, who I have spoken to several times before and am really chuffed to have another just off-the-cuff conversation with this amazing human. So welcome, Sol.
Oh, thank you, Denby. You're amazing yourself. I was looking back through your Spirit Your Reality book. You Are a Reality. I love your title. How punny that is. But yeah, you go into some amazing territory. It's amazing how much how many subjects you could interweave in one book.
Yeah, well, I just thought, why not just whack it all into the one offering. It's and there is a lot of stuff in there too for people that that's going to probably like your work too. Things that people are familiar with and other things that make them just go, hang on a minute, I need to put that down and walk away for a bit. It's hard.
Yeah.
It is hard to put everything. I don't know how you feel, I'm sure, because you've written certainly a lot more books than I have. It's when you want to get stuff out, it's really challenging to know how much to put out there. And also you got to be really careful of the language that you use, don't you? Because we quite often assume when, like, for instance, when you and I are talking, we mention terms that most people just go, hang on a minute, reverse, rewind. What does that actually mean? Like, you've got to really unpack things and come down to, and I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but to the common denominator. So make it as really foundational so people can grasp what you're actually talking about. Because what you, and especially what you've written about in your books, whether they're fictitious or not, are pretty hardcore concepts, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. Every once in a while, someone plays that back to me, and I'm reminded of the complexity of some of this material. And sometimes people are playing it back in a way that you can tell they really liked it. And other times they're challenged by it. And I guess both are fine responses. But I know that even in this last book that I wrote about the whole cult phenomenon, yeah, I did a lot of unpacking and finding that common denominator to make it more essay-like and approachable. I found that I had to do that with this material, because the material itself was off-putting. Here I am talking about the whole world being a kind of cult. So I had to break through that barrier as best I could. And then just from a conceptual standpoint, I'm talking about Loosh and, Kundalini and all these energetic concepts having to do with consciousness and energy. And I want to make them understandable. So, every once in a while, I would throw in the word mojo as a synonym for Loosh.
That's right.
just to lighten the mood a little bit and let people know that actually we're always talking about similar concepts. We're just languaging it differently.
Yep. Because it can, even for those of us who are a little bit perhaps more au fait with, the esoteric world, when we and certainly have expanded our digestion of what's happened in the last couple of years, even us, those of us, can still sort of go, hang on a minute, like, there's always more to learn and expand upon, isn't there?
I think so. I really think so. I'm constantly learning, and I'm also constantly unlearning. I know that I think I reached a saturation point with learning in the conspiracy theory community, and I hit a kind of threshold where I realized that people aren't really discovering anything anymore, or if they ever were, they're just creating it and it's being fed back to them by whatever this thing is that we're living in.
Totally.
So I actually don't care that much about learning anymore. And even the expression that I'm doing these days, I've been doing a lot of music, is very shorthand, very, very poetic, sometimes philosophical, but I'm not going on super deep dives outside of some articles that I'm writing, which maybe I'll combine into a book one of these days. But the idea of taking on like a big book project right now just seems incompatible with where I am energetically.
Yeah, I totally feel that. And it seems that there's been quite a few of us in, like, even like I set that intention at the end of, quote unquote, last year, which obviously, calendars aside, whatever. And not as a New Year's resolution, but just like, I'm not going to go forwards from this point, still, exhausting myself basically and depleting myself by staying up to date with the latest, as I say, quote unquote, fuckery about what's going on in the world. Because I'd love to hear your perspective on this, but Bernard Gunter was writing about it this week, and he's amazing in his writings and sharings as well. that about 90% of the population on the planet don't get what's going on in the world and possibly never will. So at some point, as you say, we have to step back. And I was just saying to you, before we started recording, like preserving our mental health. And I'm doing that by swimming in the ocean every day. Like everybody's got to find what works for them. But it really does feel like we've reached this, as you say, saturation point of like, I know enough now. And I don't feel that urgency to try and quote unquote wake people up now. I'm just going to get on with living my best life.
Yeah, well, I applaud you. I wish more people would do that. I was, you were saying that 90% of the people don't know what's going on, and I was going to make a joke to the effect that the other 10% really don't know what's going on because they think they do. It's they're so convinced that they do understand what's going on that they're in these little reality tunnels, and they're all just fabrications. I feel very strongly they're fabrications of their own. Of their own inner truth, if you will, that comes back at them. So they're finding what they're looking for over and over and over again because there's nothing real here. This is Maya. This is the funhouse, baby. This is not a real world.
Can you go into that a bit more, Sol? Because that's a really big topic, and that's and perfectly articulated there as well. Because we will always keep finding what it is that we're projecting, and that we're for verification almost of like, see. And it's this whole duality thing, isn't it? Of like we need to, we're conditioned, programmed, hybridized, whatever, to always go, it has to be black or white. And I really feel it's like we're the invitation now is to be able to hold both dualities and just allow them to be there, and then to, rise above or move beyond any attachment to either, right or wrong, good or bad, or even, light versus evil. Do you want to share your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, you're like rattling around in my brain with your thoughts. I mean, I feel so similarly. Well, I've been breaking down the kind of construct that we're in for a long time, and I've looked at it from the simulationist lens, and then I've really gone beyond the idea that that we're living in some kind of technological matrix like artificial reality. To feeling like really what we're inhabiting is just a dream. And it's just a slowed down dream where things change a little bit less quickly. But because there are layers to dreams. So here we are in maybe an outer layer of the dream world or worlds, but it doesn't mean it's not a dream. It just means it's a dream that appears to have more fixed rules than other dreams, but it really doesn't have fixed rules. I mean, not even the speed of light is apparently constant. Rupert Sheldrake has gone into this. I bring this up. I just not too long ago, I there was some new sort of like a new fish, like a hybrid, creature with a bunch of like 20 arms, the feathered something or other was found in the Southern Ocean, the new species out of the blue, a fairly large creature. I mean, so the idea that we have like cornered the known and we understand the real is crazy because the real is not a fixed thing. It's constantly feeding back new stuff. So when you get reality like conspiracy theorists and these researchers who are going out and looking into all of these mysteries of the ancient world and stuff. Well, they're going to find them because they're looking for them, and they're going to be fed this information. And over a while, this con over a period of time, this dreamscape will feed to them enough, quote unquote, evidence for them to plausibly assert that such and such happened or such and such didn't happen. But it's all just a fabrication, every last bit of it. I believe biology is a fabrication. We agree on certain things culturally at given times. That's why we have stories of giants in the past, for example. That was a cultural agreement among dreamers to live in a world where there were giants.
It's just, it's never ending, isn't it?
I
As you
know this is really intense for people to kind of wrap their minds around, but I invite you to consider. All of the philosophies, whether you're looking at like Zhuangzi and his story about I no longer know if I'm the person who dreamed I was a butterfly or if I'm the butterfly dreaming of the dreamer, right? I mean, this is the kind of conundrum we find ourselves in. There's no way of proving that we're not in a dream.
Yeah, totally.
And
And it's
a lot of the information within what people call reality, like the Mandela effect, for example, is so dreamlike and weird. That it actually, is a kind of evidence that it is a dream. So we have actually, in some ways, have more evidence that we're living in a dream world than we have that we're living in a real world.
Yeah, totally. And the indigenous here, the Aborigines here in Australia, call it the dream time.
The dream time, exactly.
And we go, okay, well, that means time. Okay, we've got to put it in this certain little bracket of actual, quote unquote, time of part of history of what we've been told has happened and will be and is happening. And therefore, it's separated from us. Whereas, I mean, to me, the overall picture about everything that's been happening in the last couple of years certainly is about realizing that we're not separate from anything and from one another, and that's the biggest issue probably humanity's had for eons and eons and eons, is just believing that we're different from one another. I mean, yes, we are diverse, but we're actually all the same energetic. And you write about this brilliantly in all of your books, and of course with your regenics work that you do. Sorry, the dog's about to bark at someone out the window. Of course. Let's talk about that, because I'm happy to share that sort of. I've just done the second session with you. Can you start to explain, apart from all the amazing work in your writings and your books, etc., which we'll get to as well? I noticed that you're also, whilst you're still doing that, you're also kind of like me. It's like stepping away from some of that side of yourself and going more back to, to your shamanic healing roots, I suppose, by, sharing more about this incredible process that you have, just that's just evolved through you, through your own experience. So can you touch on that, Sol?
Yeah, so regenetics is a sound healing modality, and it really is designed to heal a and heal and upgrade a damaged and or a limited bioenergy blueprint. So we all have an aura, an energy field around our bodies, and I'm not really talking about the electromagnetic energy field, the torus that we're in, that a lot of researchers have studied, like HeartMath Institute, looking at the energetic field of the heart, kind of going on a toroid double wing pattern out from the body. That's great, but that's really an electromagnetic phenomenon. I'm talking about a kind of hyperdimensional phenomenon where we have an expanded aura. That is like a, some people might even call it like our personal Akashic, if you will. It's the record of who we are, our blueprints, our patterns, possibly our past lives, that sort of thing. Where when you get traumatized here in this dream, that's your energy field, your aura is the part of your dream body that records that trauma and holds it in place so that it keeps playing out in your life. So the idea behind regenetics is to use sound to actually stimulate a self-healing ability in the human being to correct those distortions or release that trauma and to help the body, mind, and spirit heal.
It's brilliant, and having experienced it with you as well, it's hard to sort of put into words. But I'm just thinking, Sol, while anybody who might be listening to this for the first time is not familiar with your work, or maybe not even understands, the complexity of sound healing and healing in general and what that involves. What's the what? Because I'm noticing as well in the last few months that there's been a lot of sound healing courses and people using tuning forks and people getting, doing shamanic drum making workshops and blah de blah and all that sort of stuff, which you and I have been involved in for decades. And but it seems like it's like this trend again within, dare I say, the New Age movement, or just the greater spiritual community of like, okay, well, sound healing works, and people have sort of coming to grips with understanding that they are more than this physical body, whether it's just the energy you described or as an electromagnetic, field around us. What's the difference, or is it just as beneficial to be out there, doing some random, not necessarily therapeutic based or educated sound, quote unquote, healing, as opposed to very specific, I don't want to use the word manipulation, but I will for the moment, manipulation of tones and sounds and vowels, etc., as you do. Can you actually do any damage if you use sound healing without the proper training or the inner standing or having been through a cathartic journey with sound yourself first?
Oh yeah, that's a really, really good question. And well, let me just say, I was really sick for a long time, as you know, and I had an autoimmune illness that was induced by a certain type of allopathic intervention that's where most of us are familiar with,
It shall
especially if you
remain
travel.
unnamed,
Oh, so remain unnamed, but I got really, really sick, and then I tried so many things, and I tried a lot of different versions of sound healing. And I can't say that any of those things hurt me in any major way. Occasionally, I would feel that some of the sound healing modalities that I experienced would stimulate detox or would exacerbate my symptoms temporarily as it kind of stirred things up. But, you know, it was doing something, I suppose, but it wasn't taking care of the problem. I still had my allergies. I still had my fatigue, you know, all these fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue like symptoms. So it never got me over the hump. And it really took going to a very deep level where I was looking at what I call the inner genetic structure, the real inner genetic bedrock of our being, and beginning to look at how that interfaces with the energy fields. It was only then that I realized, oh gosh, we have to actually go very deep into that subtle anatomy to stimulate that self-healing potential. And when I did that, I began to heal. And that was a bit of a process where I detoxed and got stronger over time, but I immediately started to be able to eat more and more foods, and I was less reactive to environmental you know, factors, whether that was like, you know, hydrocarbons or whatever, you know, that sort of thing. It took a while. Then I know at one point I did experiment with just some other type of healing that I did a couple of different times. And none of that was regenetics. It was just my own experimentation. And I blew myself out pretty hard, pretty hardcore doing some experiments. So that told me that, yeah, you can hurt yourself if you're not you know, aligned with whatever's happening, or if you do too much too fast. I was dealing with a lot of different I was looking at not only sound healing, but I was using sacred geometry and other things at that time, and I really, really blew myself out pretty hard, and it took me about a month to recover from that. So I don't want to scare people though, because I feel like part of the reason for being here is to have experiences and experiment. And you know, I don't want people not to try things. I think we should be trying things. That's part of this you know, spiritual experience as a human, quote unquote, human being.
No, totally. And of course, I mean, when the individual is ready, then they'll start to experiment with things, you know, whether it's like they take the initiative to go and do something on their own, or they get dragged along by a friend, or find themselves just
Right.
accidentally thrown into some sort of healing situation. I mean, that's all perfectly designed as well, I believe. So, I suppose it comes down to, again, you, the individual being ready, and then also, being really, self-aware of your motivations for doing certain things. I mean, I'm sure that you read, because I think you also, and thank you, recommended my Substack about, after I talked with George Capasalis about, you know, the chakras and the Kundalini. I mean, you say the blowout. Many people can relate to Kundalini blowout, and that's the perfect example. I'd love to get you to expand on, you know, what you're knowing and your experiences around that, because if you have, even just from a really basic visual, say if your spine is like a hose that's got lots of kinks in it, and then you try and just plug that hose in and turn the tap on and expect the water to come gushing freely out the other end, that's not going to happen if you've got all sorts of blockages, along the way, whether they're at chakra points or in joints or organs or whatever.
Yes. Oh,
So,
I agree.
sorry.
Oh, I totally agree. This whole blowout, you know, the chakra blowout is, like you say, because of these adhesions or these kinks, or you know, these kind of dysfunctional areas in that anatomy. You can definitely I mean, you can throw your back out. You can really feel like your brain's been fried if you do it too hot and heavy.
Yeah, some people have had like psychic separation or just completely split themselves out of themselves. And I mean, that's a rare thing, I'm sure. But I have read and heard of people that have just, never come back from those sorts of scenarios. So let's go a little bit more into that because, the fragmentary body that you work with and explain about in your work, that really fascinated me. And I can, after my second session now, and I'll get you to sort of explain what's involved if you can. I can really feel that, like viscerally in my energetic field more than I could before.
So, you did the first activation, which is the foundational activation, potentiation, and so that's what really got me back on my feet. And the I noticed the biggest change after about the 5 month mark, which was when the fragmentary body sealed. And the fragmentary body is basically like a almost like an energetic hole in your second chakra, which is the sex chakra, and it's this area where you leak a lot of energy and where energy is taken from you. And it's also where parasites and etheric parasites, mind parasites, archons come into you and engage in all manner of fuckery, to use that wonderful word. So what happens at about the 5 month mark of potentiation is that hole in your subtle anatomy is healed, it's closed. And then when you do the second activation, which is articulation, then that begins to take that chakra area and that the corresponding auric field. It's like a sort of a sound and light nexus point, and it begins to bring it back online so that it functions at a more optimal level. So that's kind of where you are in the process, is you're kind of restoring or upgrading that second chakra area energetically.
It's just amazing. And I've done this work for like 25 years, and it's funny. I'm always really open, as you know, about sharing my own experiences, so others can learn, and also just because I that's just who I am. I'm very transparent like that. And it's like, okay, so I've been operating, like many have, and probably will continue to. That's their choice. On the, the format of the nine chakras and all the stuff that I've been taught and learnt over the years. And that's worked okay, that's worked well for me as well. At the point again of where I've been at in my own spiritual energetic journey. But it's, I'm walking living proof that it's like, wow, there's always something more to experience if you and if you feel that that's something that's right for you and that the timing is right for you to really give it a chance and to absorb it. And as we touched on before we started recording, like getting out of your head, like just allowing yourself to be in that heart space, because that's the creative spaces, you well know, that all these new possibilities can come in if we just locked in our head and go, nah, that's what I was taught. This is the way. Again, that's the black and the white dialogue. Then we're cutting our noses off, etherically to spite our face, aren't we?
Yeah, I think we are. It's funny you bring up the creativity, because the articulation activation, so the second activation in Regenetics, is really about creativity and also your mental activity. And a lot of people in this day and age are hyperactive mentally, and articulation has the ability to calm that down and let you think more clearly and maybe a little more slowly or more deeply about things, while simultaneously revving up your creativity and even things like sexuality, which is a form of creativity. So that's a very fun activation to be. It really is. You're at a good point right now to begin benefiting from this work in terms of your expression.
Yeah, well, I can certainly, I mean, as far as the creative side, the expression, I've just got like ideas for books. Like I want to try and tackle a fiction book, believe it or not, now, because I've never done that. And just ideas for blogs and articles and courses are just like coming even more full on like tsunami at me than they usually do. But I don't find it's not overwhelming me. I'm feeling really, and possibly that's because of the ramping up of my own self-care every day. But it's just really interesting. I feel like I'm in flow more than I was before. The first one that we did together, and I've shared this with you as well, like I might have been one of the small percentage that I actually just got more discombobulated for a little bit after that, because it was like, oh, dredged up a whole lot of old shit, which, I've been working on for years and I thought that I'd cleared. How many times have we heard that? People say that. So,
It does happen. I mean, with me, it came out really mostly in the form of just a lot of toxic sludge that came out of my body. There was a visible, tangible proof that I was releasing all of this stuff that had been holding me down and making me sick. So but for some people, it comes out in just their life circumstances, their relationships might be readjusted. Or, other things can happen. It can definitely shake things up before a new alignment occurs. And if you think about what's going on with your energy fields when you experience regenetics, you are creating a new alignment.
yep, totally. And in regards, obviously, what, the sacral chakra, that sacred plexus, and being the center of sexuality, and I'll get to my question in a second, but I mean, just from my own personal sharing, like this second activation has definitely, like, I can really feel that in it's helped me contain my sexual energy. Not that it's been, certainly haven't been spreading it out there in any by any means. And certainly because of, certain circumstances and interventions in the last couple of years, it's not something that I want to be sharing with, other people who've made different medical choices to me. But it's like I did feel and have had a completion around a toxic sexual connection that's been dragging on and off for a couple of years. So that's really interesting, like that has completely been sealed and resolved through my initiation after this process. So that resonates deeply with me. But can you touch on,
Congratulations, that's awesome.
yeah, it is awesome, isn't it? It's great. And that's a freeing as well. And I mean, it's probably got something to do in relation to, obviously, the whole perimenopause trip that I'm on at the moment, and that I'm writing about and sharing and educating others about too. I mean, there's lots of different factors there, but I feel more empowered in that space, I suppose, is what I mean to say. And most people's understanding, Sol, of the base and the sacral chakra is that, the base is the root and grounding. And we've talked about this before too, where I'm sort of like, yeah, everything's inverted, and that rainbow flag is inverted, all the supposed colors of the chakra wheel, and possibly we are being deliberately plugged in and, enslaved to, what we are being told that base chakra actually is about, and we've just been going round and round circles. So can you explain, that base and that sacral and even the solar sort of section of that, and what that fragmentary body actually does in regards to making nine chakras into eight?
Right. Well, the
In 25 words or less, of course.
25 words or less. Yes. Well, going back to how we actually determined this, Lee, my partner and I, we were doing a lot of kinesiology. We were doing an allergy elimination technique as a practice, for healing, energy healing. This was years, this, 2 decades plus ago. And we w were seeing a lot of clients, and we were doing a lot of muscle testing, and we began to note various patterns of illness in people, patterns of emotional dysfunction related to the chakras and the auric fields, the fields. So we began to detail, okay, the first chakra has these characteristics. It has to do with these organ systems and these emotions, and the second one has to do with these things, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all the way up. And we, to our surprise, because I always thought we just had seven chakras, that was just what I'd been told, and I assumed it was true, and I've since done a lot of reading on this topic, and there's just tons of information about it and disagreement. But what Lee and I discovered was that everybody we were working with, including ourselves at the time, had nine chakras. There were the normal seven, and then there was an eighth one that was sort of above the head, about maybe a foot, and then there was another one that was another foot or so above that, which was the ninth chakra, right? So we're like, that's really, really, really strange. And then when we experienced potentiation, and I won't go into all the ins and outs of how that came about, but when we did this sacred sound healing on ourselves, the structure of our energy fields, the chakras, began to change. And suddenly, at one point, the ninth chakra, you could just feel it just dropping down through the energy structure, one chakra at a time. It would just drop and drop and drop and drop and drop. And this happened sort of midway through the potentiation process, which is at about the 5 month mark. And it came all the way down to the second chakra, and then it just married the second chakra. They fused together into one chakra. So that at that point, we only had eight chakras, and we were missing the top one. But we also no longer had the fragmentary body in the second chakra because it had been sealed by the incoming ninth chakra. It was a bizarre process, and you could feel it physiologically. You could feel it just ticking off all of the, as it would go into the chakra that had to do with the lungs. All of a sudden, you would start feeling lung detox, and I was just crazy. It was just one. It was so exact, and we were like, "Oh, this can't be happening." Lo and behold, now 20 years later, thousands and thousands of people have experienced this work, and so many of them have felt what we described in their energetic restructuring. So, in terms of what those bottom chakras are related to, that's a bit of a complex discussion, Denby, because as you know, we also have identified different energy families. So I don't think that's common to all people, like what those things represent or what those chakras are. But the second chakra is common to everybody, and that really has to do with the mouth and tongue and all of the oral structure and the sexual organs. Those are the main things that the second chakra, the fragmentary body, is related to. So if you want to look at it, it's related to creation and creativity. So it's also related to procreation. It is at once our weakness, where we lose our energy, and the way that we go back and find our creative energy again. And if we trace it all the way back, I think you run smack into source or the creator. It's that direct channel to all that is, if you will.
Yeah. Now, people listening to this who aren't really familiar with chakras or just coming to that term are probably going to be going, how on earth can you feel something that you can't see? I've found that, and as you obviously have too, and Lee and your clients, etc., and people that have experienced this or any other sort of healing, that's a process that takes time to become aware, first of all, that you do have something other than this physical body. That's the first part. And then the awareness of what those layers are, and then being able to feel and sense into the subtle bodies. That's a process for people. And there will be lots of people listening to this going, yep, I know exactly what you're talking about. Soul, I could feel it like this. It was this sensation, it had this visual or this texture to it. Like, that's a process. But I'm really curious about this, soul, because speaking with George as I was the other week, and I've also spoken with other people too, and I've mentioned this to you before as well, who say that the chakras don't exist, that you need to actually remove them, that they are overlays or imprints, that we only ever have one chakra, it's the heart one. I mean, what are all your thoughts? Can you sort of help me understand, and people listening, a little bit more about, what your perspective is on that, and what chakras more than likely actually are?
Yeah, let me unpack
That's
that
a
a
lot
little
to
bit.
unpack.
But before I get there was a Japanese scientist named Hiroshi Motoyama, who back in the 80s, he developed instruments that he could measure of the electromagnetic energy that the chakras of yoga masters gave off. So this is not an unproven or hypothetical phenomenon. Okay, to the extent that anything is provable in this dreamscape, and that kind of brings me to my next point. If this is going to sound perhaps wild, but my feeling is that
Just for a change.
if you believe that there is only one chakra and that you are filled up with implants and you're kind of an artificial being in that way, then you are. And if you believe otherwise, as I do, a belief is a tool of creativity. It's basically related to the imagination. But if you're walking around believing in facts and in truth and in universals, then you're basically being a religious zealot. If, on the other hand, you understand that you're going around making all this shit up in some fundamental way, then you can choose what to believe in to craft your reality from that point of view.
Yep. Yep. So we're all delusional, basically.
Basically, and so it's like Ambrose Bierce, the writer of the Devil's Dictionary, he had a wonderful quote to the effect that all of it's something like all are delusional, but he who can identify his delusions is a philosopher.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and it's the dreaming, as you
So
said.
really what I'm getting at is this extreme extremely sort of philosophical, skeptical position about what reality is. And I feel that reality is a malleable construct at all times in all ways.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you. That's a good way of putting it. And I mean, the work that you're doing with this, refining of the energetic vortices, could this be the key to our awakening? If is this maybe the only one thing that we really came here to get, to set ourselves free so we can, is this the key to us finally as a species embodying and integrating that spiritual aspect of ourselves, other than just living in the physical, mental, and emotional parts of ourselves?
Well, here's the thing. I think that there is no key. There's no one way of doing it. There's all kinds of different paths, and someone else could create a framework for that awakening and that evolution of consciousness that would work great for people on that wavelength. I realized long ago that not everyone is on the regenetics wavelength. And I mean, far from it. A lot of people, can't even understand what I'm saying. And then there are other people who just vehemently reject what I'm saying. And then there are other people who are curious enough to explore it and maybe experience it. And of those, a number of them, some decent percentage over the years have had life-changing experiences from it. Is
Yeah.
this, does this mean it's a key to awakening? I think, yeah, maybe for that individual, they happen to find the right thing that really worked for them, that was somehow in alignment with them energetically. I don't know if this has to do with the soul contract or anything like that. I have no idea, why that would work
Yeah.
for some people. But even in that awakening process, okay, now you're awake, quote unquote. So what do you do with your life? What do you do now? And really, I think the journey continues. And this is, and you mentioned the shamanic stuff earlier. I mean, the shamanic stuff is really, I mean, it's a whole different level. It's related to some concepts that some listeners might be familiar with, such as the light body or ascension, that kind of thing, activating your rainbow body. This is a deeply shamanic concept that the shamans call lighting the fire from within. And essentially, we're talking about conscious dying, where as you die, you transform your energy body and you take your consciousness with you. To me, that is the ultimate game being played here, is to determine who can do that.
Yeah, totally, totally on the same wavelength with you. We might have touched on that, or we've spoken privately about that, because that's my, I mean, I've got death all throughout my astrological chart, apparently, as being someone to work with it, as to transmute that and to guide others through that rite of passage in various ways, and reclaiming, we use the word sovereignty, but to mean reclaiming your seed soul self, whatever word you want to whack in there, that is possibly all that we came here to get. It's not about, buying the properties here and having all of the accolades and the plaques on the wall or the success, etc., that we've been, conditioned to become so attached to. It's more about, being in that sense of empowerment and integrative energetic within yourself. I agree with you
Yeah,
there.
I think it's an inside job. I've been saying, for the last year, I've been repeating this mantra, is that the only way out is in. You want to get out of the matrix, then you don't look outside yourself. You don't look at the quote unquote real world. It's not real to begin with. The only thing that really matters is you and your inner journey. And by journeying in that interior way, in a certain fashion, it's possible to have a complete reversal where you end up on the outside looking in at this whole construct. And that's what has been reported by a lot of people who have had various types of out-of-body astral projection and shamanic fire from within types of experiences.
Yep. And I mean, if we're already infinite consciousness anyway, soul, then there's no need for us to quote unquote ascend. Where are you going to ascend to as well? You know,
I
there's
think you just I just think you stay on the journey. I know the shamans, it's a fascinating thing. They call God or creator or the source, they call it the eagle or the great eagle or the black eagle or Ometeotl, I think is another name from the Toltec lineage down in Mesoamerica. It doesn't matter what we call it. And they describe it as this giant eagle. Because that's kind of what it looks like energetically when shamans go into seeing. And I feel that I've dreamed of the eagle before. I've never journeyed and seen it in what I would consider my real time. So I have to qualify that. So I do have some perspective on this, but I don't have the full-fledged shamanic perspective on this. In any case, the eagle, essentially, it's very related to some of these new age spirituality concepts. That we are all the one consciousness experiencing itself in multiplicity. So, in the shamanic viewpoint, which goes back a very long time and predates all of this new age stuff, they believe that the eagle kind of got bored and decided to create a universe or a world and divide itself up into a lot of little people over different generations. And then harvest those people as they died and take their sort of eat their experience. In some ways, I believe this may have been where J.K. Rowling got the whole concept of Death Eaters. I mean, it's very strange, but it's just occurred to me that's such a weird thing. So it's literally the eagle is taking your life experience and reincorporating it back into the totality of its gnosis. Right? So the shamanic path is very interesting because the shamans believe, based on various factors that I won't get into right now, but there's a lot of food for thought here, that there's a alternative path where if you raise your personal power, your mojo enough to basically become capable of journeying in a kind of lucid dreaming way outside through the dreamscape out of this construct, then you can also take all of your life experience that you've remembered through a process of what they call recapitulation. And it's almost like you've created a computer disk or a file that you get to hand off to the great eagle in lieu of giving it your consciousness. It's a copy of your consciousness, and it will accept it. Because it does the same thing. It gives it that experience. And then you can fly on past the eagle and go on into different worlds and perhaps create different worlds of your own. Maybe then you become the great eagle.
It's a big difference between the actual, you know, the original teachings and philosophy, you know, mythologies of shamanism, as you say, and New Age shamanism, because there's a shaman on every street corner almost nowadays, and on every yoga mat, and a lot of those practices. I mean, I like the term, I mean, earth-based practices, really. These people are, you know, touting themselves as shamanic practitioners with very little to none, no training or very short, brief trainings, and missing and not having that experience, or really understanding, comprehending rather, that the responsibility and the discipline that being a quote unquote shaman, an elder, actually involves. And I certainly don't put myself in that bracket at all. But again, like we said with the sound healing, anybody banging a drum or a triangle and then creating a nice relaxing space is quite different to, you know, somebody, you know, going into that underworld, you know, with somebody's alongside somebody's actual astral, physical, you know, etheric body, and ushering through those realms safely on that spiritual level, so they can come back. We're seeing a lot of that too. A lot of I wrote about it this week about what do you call it? You know, detox protocols and products, etc., that are being pushed throughout the whole New Age spiritual community, which some things are really good, and of course some things are now coming to be proven to be actually connected to the NANO technology. So again, the gaming keeps expanding, doesn't it? With the information and with
Yeah, it's rabbit holes inside rabbit holes for
inside of
sure.
rabbit holes, worlds and worlds and worlds. That's never ending. And I agree with you. This is that I mean, I've heard that concept, the story of the great eagle as well. And when I bring it back to you mentioned the word before, now dismemberment. No, I have a really powerful dismemberment ceremony or practice that I was taught and that I do myself. And that, when I get to my own personal limitation of like, what the heck's going on? Or I don't want to be here anymore. Or this is all too crazy. I'm not hanging around for that shit, if that's what's going to manifest. That is like a godsend, so to speak, because it helps you extricate yourself from the network of whatever this dreaming is, so you can, as you just said, then bypass, give a copy or consciousness or whatever imprint of yourself, and then carry on as you need to galactically. But that's a massive concept for most people to wrap their heads around, of course.
Yeah, I mean, you could break it down into you talked about going to a kind of common denominator earlier. We can do that with what we're talking about here. We're really talking about being in a from my I mean, I won't put words in your mouth, but what I'm talking about is that we're in a construct that is like a dream or is a dream, and it is you can exit it in the same way that you can exit a dream. For example, like recently I had an amazing lucid dream experience where I was dreaming, and then in my dream I dreamed that I was dreaming, and I woke up in the dream inside the dream.
Yeah,
And
wow.
this is what I'm talking about. This is how what we call reality works. We're just in one layer of this onion, and there is no center of the onion.
I've certainly been
So
trippy
what
dreams.
I'm talking about in the construct is that we, until we say no and reverse the process, which we have sovereignty to do so, we will be loosed by the world cult. It will take our energy from us to construct itself and its own doomsday scenarios using all of its little conspiracy theorist minions.
Let's talk about this latest book, Sol, because we're coming up to the hour, and I'm finding that, I mean, I could talk to you for hours, as you know, but I'm finding I could, if we keep things within the hour, it's a bit more,
Could I
accessible.
say one more thing, Demby? So what the other option is to actually begin building your energy, your power. And that's what we've been talking about this entire time, is actually different ways and strategies, including regenetics, including swimming, yoga, for building up your energy.
Yep. And purifying as much of yourself on all those layers as you can, so that spirit aspect of yourself can be fully integrated. Your latest book, down, un unpack that for us. You've been as quickly as you can, because yeah, the word cult, obviously, when people hear that, a lot of them switch off. And a lot of them just go into probably fear, or certainly people who have maybe been involved and in those sorts of situations might go into trauma. So what inspired you to write? I mean, you're constantly writing like I am, but pumping out amazing work. What, after Callie, how much did you, first of all, did you give yourself a break after finishing that one? And what inspired you to write this latest epic?
It ended up not being a very long book, thank goodness. I mean, it was, because it is kind of heavy. It's heavy material written in a kind of light way. One person, Miguel over at Aeon Byte, he said it was like some kind of weird, wild Marshall McLuhan style book, very, very experimental series of essays. There's a huge backstory there that I don't really have to get into. I feel like I've shared that with a lot of people. I will say this, Lee and I just did started a new podcast on my Substack and YouTube channel, and it's called Being Real in an Unreal World, and it gets into some of this territory where I'm looking at beliefs, for example. The first episode is called Beliefs, and we just spend about 15 or 20 minutes talking about the way that our beliefs are weaponized against us when we let them be, and we don't realize that beliefs are just something that we're choosing to believe, that all of this really is a choice and we have the ability to choose. So I just had an experience last year with a lot of unpleasantness around it that kind of spurred me in that catalyzing way that unpleasant things can have to look at the world, not as a real world, but very seriously as an imaginative or dreamlike construct. And that it is a construct that operates as a gigantic cult where there are all kinds of subcults. And when I say the word cult, what I mean is a situation where at least two people or two consciousnesses are interacting in such a way that one consciousness is giving energy to the other one against its will or against its knowledge.
Yeah, right.
So this can be in a relationship. You can be in a cult of two in a relationship, or you can be in a, you know, an acknowledged cult, or you can be in a religion. They're all cults. You can be a sports fan cult. You can be in a conspiracy theory community, the shape of the earth, that kind of thing, cult. You can be, you know, in anything else that is highly emotionally charged where people have to be right or wrong. That is a cult dynamic. It's the hallmark of a cult dynamic. And when you engage in that scenario, you're allowing your loose, your vital force, your energy, your kundalini to be taken from you and utilized by the cult for its purposes. And my point is that the world cult's purpose is ultimately to build a kind of, you know, doomsday scenario or a very unpleasant scenario with, you know, very unpleasant outcomes for humanity, but that it doesn't have to go that way. It's also perfectly willing to give the energy back to people and allow them to construct a totally different kind of quote unquote reality. But it requires a choice to do that. So when people are choosing to focus on the negative and these doomsday scenarios, these fear-based, fear porn scenarios, they are complicit in the creation of those scenarios.
Yeah, I agree. And I've put my hand up for that in the past as well. I mean, we've all sort of gone through phases of that because everything is so.
Dude, then people are the same way. I'm the same way. I'm as guilty as anyone in that regard. I'm not like looking down my nose. I've been there. I understand how heroin like some of that material can be. It's like a drug.
Yep, the black pill, so to speak. What would you say to someone who's listening, who's in that phase perhaps, or is maybe sitting here going, oh my God, that's me, I'm doing that. How do I not do that? What would your advice be to someone through your own experience there?
Well, in The World Cult and You, the last two chapters, well, the next to last two chapters are about strategies for coming to terms with the scenario and taking back your energy. And some of the I divide them into two sets of strategies. One is a series of not doings, like how to pull away from the things that are taking your energy. And I list various things that you might want to look at in your own life, and you feel free to add your own, right? And follow your nose down this path. And then the other set is things to actually add energy to your system. So some of those things might be, you know, as simple as just engaging in creativity. I talk about regenetics. I talk about recapitulation. I talk about lucid dreaming. I talk about movement and dance, all kinds of things that actually liberate us to take back our energy and our sovereignty.
Yeah, it's not never just one thing, is it? It's finding the right, you know, recipe for the individual that works.
Right. It is kind of a recipe because someone may be attracted to just one or two things and that really works perfectly for them. Other people might do a medley of things and that works well for them too. Although I do say that FOMO, fear of missing out, is an issue here. When you're just running around like a chicken with your head cut off, you're probably not really making a lot of progress in terms of gathering personal power.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I've been seeing that everywhere at the moment. For you, personally, to wrap up, Sol, what's your ideal dreaming of this next phase for your life, or even if you want to go so far as humanity? But like everybody has their line in the sand, I suppose you could call it, with how things are looking like they're going to be dreaming and manifesting on this plane. So, what's your ideal dreaming scenario if you want to share that.
Sure. Yeah, I know that. And I've written some about this too. I don't really know about the macro, and I really feel that an overfocus on the macro, you know, when you're trying to save the world and you haven't saved yourself, if you want to look at it that way, it's misplacing your energy. So I don't spend a lot of time focusing on that now. And I feel like you know, my journey is really an inner journey. And if I can help people, if I can, there's a wonderful title of a book by a writer I love named Fred Chappell, and the title is Brighten the Corner Where You Are. So if I can brighten the corner where I am, then I'm really happy with that. And I think if a lot of people just brighten their corners, the world would change in a positive way.
Yep, that's beautiful. I love that. Thanks for sharing that. How can
Yeah,
people get?
read
I will.
the
I've
book.
just written it down. I'm constantly. I've got like, you know, a stream of books coming from fish pond to my house all the time. Where can people
It's
reach out?
fiction. So if you're looking at doing fiction one of these days, he's a very inspiring writer, but
Oh,
super
okay.
gifted person. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. No,
I had dinner with him one time and drinks.
yeah, nice. No, I've been looking at you know, reading all the different suggestions on that style and also screenwriting too. I'm just sort of trying my hand at different ways, but you know, who knows? I might completely stuff it up and it might not be for me. But it's fun exploring. I suppose that's a good note for people to, you know, a good takeaway is just like there's no right or wrong with your creative expression. You just try different things and some people, it was we have our fortes and our gifts and nothing has to be perfect or look beautiful, like on a canvas, for example, or socially acceptable. It's just whatever comes through you and out of you in that moment of integrity and in personal connection is beautiful.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I shared a meme today because I'm off, you know, creating music right now. I have an album out, and or it's out on my Substack. I haven't released the whole thing, but I'm releasing singles. But I put a little meme out today that said, "I'm not sure who needs to hear this, but you're allowed to outgrow people. This includes past versions of yourself."
Yeah, I love that. That's great. You're always an inspiration, brother. Thank you so much. I'll include all the so you've got a new YouTube channel. Just quickly blurb through those and I'll put them in the show notes as well for people.
Oh, thanks. Well, let's see. Saul Luckman Uncensored is my YouTube, and it's my Substack. And I also have a Saul Luckman Music official on YouTube. You can come over and listen to some of my music. I've got some videos up, and I have another song dropping Friday of 12 a.m. So it's called Hanged Man. It's about the tarot. It's the, you know, it's a sort of a shamanic journey through the tarot, but it's a song. It's a rock and roll song. So
Yeah, well,
check it out.
I've got to, that's worth getting up at that time for sure. That sounds really intriguing. Awesome.
Yeah. Well, listen, thank you for having me. I was hoping we would get to chat, and I feel like, you know, these chats end up being all about me, but I'm very interested in you and your work and your world. You just have such good questions that send us off into directions that I guess are worth exploring.
No, thank you, darling. Well, you can interview me next time. We can reverse roles.
Maybe I will, and maybe I'm setting it up. You know, Lee and I are doing this podcast, so maybe, you know, maybe at some point in time we'll have like podcast guests on for a brief period, and we'll set it up and do something kind of fun that way. So I'm not saying that's how it's going to go, but we've talked about it with a couple of people so far. So if we get to the point where we feel like there's enough interest in the actual podcast, then we'll take it to that level.
I'm sure there will be. You have an amazing audience already, and it's always growing. And I'm more than happy to support that and be a part of it. So, until next time, Saul Luckman, thank you so much. Lots of love to all of you and the family.
Thank you, Denby. To yours as well, and you.
Thanks, honey. Bye.